Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that doesn't cramp. I'm Jake Mintz, that's Jordan Schusterman, and we can throw nine scoreless and hit three homers without my hand getting a little tingly. Shohei Ohtani, you know, figure it out.
I was going to say, like, I feel like this is maybe the one thing. Like, cramping is not something that I really have ever dealt with in my life, to be honest. And I know that part of that is because I am not, you know, experiencing legitimate physical strenuous activity nearly as often as, let alone Shohei Ohtani, but probably just like the average person. And I realize that, but there is a sense in me that I'm just like, I don't cramp and Ohtani cramps. All right, cool, nice.
It's because Jordan's not getting anywhere near heart rate zone 3. So he has no need to cramp ever. For those of you who don't know what we're talking about, Shohei Ohtani, the two-way dynamo, stopped pitching last night in the fourth inning, after the fourth inning, because he started getting some hand cramps. It is his second cramp-related issue.
Third
cramp-related issue over the last
back-to-back days after the deadline, and then this is the third. By the way, that is going to be our first topic. We're going to talk about the Angels-Mariners game. We are going to get a little bit of a bigger picture look at the wild card mess, which just is so much fun at this time of year. There is something so special about, as soon as we get past the trade deadline, every game suddenly feels 10 times more important.
It's
great. I love that so much. So we're going to talk about that. And then in the second half of the show, we are going to play a guessing game. Bring the podcast audience into a guessing game that Jake and I have been doing since, I believe, 2017. So excited to introduce that. And then, of course, we'll wrap it up with the good, the bad, and the ugly. But Jake, as you just mentioned, we have to begin with our superheroes cramping. And Jake,
I just want to get I just want to make something clear. You have never cramped.
Well, I'm not saying that's true. It's just like not something that's not a regular experience that I can't like point back to like, oh yeah, that happened to me recently. I'm trying to think of when I would have, like, cramping is different than soreness, right? Like, that cramping is something that is, yeah, you're like, yeah, duh, obviously, right? So, like, describe what is your experience with cramping? I'm sure this happens more for you as someone who, again, bikes 50 miles sometimes for fun.
So when you cramp, the way I would describe it to you, Jordan, is like, take any muscle and activate it and like squeeze it, flex it, right?
Right.
And then that is happening to you against your control.
Over and over and over.
Yeah. Over and over and over again, basically, is a way to think about cramping. Mm-hmm. And so for Shohei Ohtani, for this to happen to his hand.
specifically his middle finger, which was the same finger he was having some sort of blisters with. But he basically came out of the game after four shutout innings and told Phil Nevin, hey, dude, I can't pitch anymore. And this is different than the last week when he was removed because of cramping in his legs, and he removed himself as a hitter, including at a time like right before he was about to be up with the bases loaded. He's like, sorry, I can't do it. But this was especially notable because he gets removed after four scoreless innings, and then he stays in the game as a hitter. Now, we've seen, of course, that happens all the time where he gets removed as a pitcher, but just the Angels PR Twitter account posting, Shohei Ohtani was removed from tonight's game as a pitcher, in parentheses, with cramping in his right-handed fingers. It's just such a great, absurd reality that we have here for Mr. Ohtani. He goes on to hit a massive home run later on, which we can talk about in your experience watching this game. But it is such a wild thing because clearly, okay, so you describe cramping, you understand cramping. If you're cramping in your right hand, like, that's also how he's holding the bat, right? Like, that's his bottom hand of the bat. Holding the bat, right? So clearly he was still able to do that. So what is your interpretation of still being able to do that versus pitching? I'm not doubting it. It's just like interesting.
Yeah. Well, pitching, I mean, you're just doing it over and over and over and over again. Like, and if your hand cramps flexing up while you're pitching, that ball could go anywhere in the universe. Whereas if your hand cramps up when you're hitting, you're just not going to hit the baseball, right?
And you're holding the bat. It's like your hand is staying in the same position versus, obviously, if you're flexing it and pitching and using different grips and everything.
Correct. Now, what is interesting about this entire thing to me is that since 2021, Shohei Ohtani has gotten the run of the show. He has gotten to build his own program with the Angels, and the Angels have basically just like let him do whatever he wants, which is the smart thing to do because it's clear that Ohtani has a very good feel for his own body. Mm-hmm. Now, he is pushing his ability to its absolute limits. It's like in it's like that scene in the second Top Gun movie, in Top Gun Maverick.
Okay. Still haven't seen it, but go ahead.
Where it's like, oh, wow, he went Mach 10. Oh, he's going to go Mach 25. Like, don't do it, Mav. It's like Ohtani, and like the ship is like, the plane is like rattling, right? Because mm-hmm. the bolts can't handle the speed. That is where Ohtani's at right now. He is just past what the human body can really handle, just from a wear and tear and like muscular exhaustion perspective. And it's fascinating that that is what is kind of going first here. Right. I don't think that any of this is a problem, because what the Angels have said to Ohtani is, you let us know when you want to, you know, pull it back, and we're fine with that. And right. so the fact that he is going to them and saying, I'm having a trouble with this, this is giving me an issue, that is notable, just because like he is recognizing his own limits here, sure. which are coming up as a result of him pushing himself to the limit, to the brink for this franchise in this season.
I would love to know if there is. I can't remember hearing anything about this with him earlier in his career. Maybe it's happened once, but I would love to know if this was ever an issue with him in Japan when he was doing even more. I mean, he was playing defense then and whatever. But when you say it's not a problem, I understand, I think, what you're getting at from a sentiment standpoint of like, he's in charge, right?
Right.
But I also think that puts the Angels in a situation where they're just like, I don't know what we're supposed to do about this. Like, we have to kind of just let him decide when he's good and when he's not. And when you say it's not a problem, that's true. And I'm not blaming Ohtani. Of course, I could not possibly ask any more from him. At the same time, it is a problem, because if Jose Soriano has to come in the fifth inning, that is a problem. That is, I know that they lost for different reasons last night, but like, any second that Ohtani's not playing is a problem. But they don't have a choice, and there's no way to fix it. Like, they're at the whims of Ohtani anyway. And so right. that's obviously well worth it. But yeah. again, like in this situation, every second, every ounce that you're not getting from him might be costing you ultimately, which in some ways maybe happened last night. Also, last night was a freak situation, which we can talk about.
If you hitch your wagon to a magical unicorn, and sometimes that magical unicorn needs to stop for water, you are at the behest of what it needs to do. Yep. And that is the Angels right now. It's really not that much more complicated than that. Mm-hmm. If Shohei Ohtani shows up to the ballpark today and says, our team name is now the Los Angeles Four-Leaf Clovers, you're like, yes, sir.
Yep. And that's the other thing. It's not like Phil Nevin's going to be like, hey, dude, like, gut it out. Like, go back out. Like, no. There's no – he gets to decide how this works, as he should, right?
Correct.
It's the greatest thing we've ever seen. So – last night, he gets removed after four innings. Jose Soriano comes in and immediately allows a home run to Eugenio Suarez. The Mariners are up 1-0. Brian Wu comes back out after five scoreless. And then in the bottom of the sixth, the Angels tack on a rally, which was started by an Ohtani intentional walk, stolen base, game-tying run on a single from CJ Cron, and then Mike Moustakas go-ahead RBI double. So it's 2-1 Angels. Jake, this was, of course, one of a later game last night, so it's probably like 11:15, 11:30 when this is happening. Describe to me your experience watching this game, because I, obviously, as a Mariners fan, was pretty locked in. I really haven't been as locked in to the Mariners in recent weeks, just because it's like I wanted to kind of know the direction they were going. Are they going to fall out of it? Is this really worth my time? Of course, I enjoy watching my favorite team no matter what. But how invested am I going to be? But this was a game I obviously had circled. And because it was 0-0 through five, like, I was in. I was pot committed. I was going to watch this, whether it was going to break my heart or not. So I was very, very, very locked in. It seems like you were not.
No. So I was at the yard all day, Yankees, Astros. And then I came home. I had dinner with a friend and my dad is staying with me. Hung out with my dad and watched like the last five innings of Astros, Yankees, because I'm covering all of the games for that series. And so I kind of want to be paying attention to that. So that ends, do some wedding planning with my fiance, and then I get in bed. And my routine when I get in bed is I put my headphones in, my AirPods in, and I put on a game on the radio, and I fall asleep to it, and then my AirPods just kind of trickle out of my ears at some point over the course of the night, And then I wake up and my AirPods are dead and my phone, you know, like that's just what I do like every night.
What a totally efficient, great way. But hey, yeah. It works for you, right? I'm not going to tell you to change anything. Sure.
Right. So I do that last night with the Mariners game. And I listened from like inning six after the Suarez home run and the Angels rally to inning eight. Okay. Top of the eighth, the Mariners fail to score.
Correct.
And then I fall asleep. Okay. I fall asleep after the top of the eighth. And then I wake up because the headphones are still in my ears and it's Rick Riz, who's the Mariners, one of the radio 85 guy, yeah. broadcasters they have mm-hmm. on the radio. Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh my God, grand slam, incredible. And in my mind, I woke up this morning and I was like, wow, Dylan Moore hit a grand slam. And apparently that's not true. And I know nothing else about the game.
Okay. So it was becoming told me a this theme.
Morning, you told me this morning, don't look it up.
Well, yeah. I mean, it was becoming a theme. You know, I'm tweeting up a storm last night. And by the way, if you're asking me to change calling Twitter, it's never going to happen. Sorry. Bottom of the eighth. Okay. So again, Ohtani's out of the game. But he's still in the game. And so Ohtani comes up in the bottom of the eighth, up 2-1, facing Isaiah Campbell. And Isaiah Campbell was in for another inning for a reason I wasn't totally understanding. Love Isaiah Campbell, but it was like, okay, are we really going to, you know, pitch to Ohtani here? Is that really the game plan? Okay, cool. It gets to 2-2 count, and it's just like he's going to challenge him and he's going to hit a home run because Ohtani had been intentionally walked already in this game and multiple times in the Blue Jays series. We never talked about the Matt Chapman saying to John Schneider, he's the only fucking guy that can hit about Ohtani. Why are we pitching to him? It was a great moment. And then he was proceeded to walk like seven times during that series. He has not seen a lot to hit. But in this situation, Isaiah Campbell late in the game, in a 2-2 count, it was just like, oh, damn it. Like, he's going to throw him a fastball and he's going to homer. I'm sitting on the couch next to Bailey. I said, he's going to hit a home run. And 96 comes in and 106 goes out over the right field fence for Ohtani's 40th home run of the game. His hand, he cramped that one 390 feet.
Cramped the shit out of it.
And it was like, well, shit. Okay. So that happens. And then it's like, all right, well, insurance run for Carlos Estevez. By the way, this is after a gnarly Reynaldo Lopez inning, that was in the eighth too, which I guess that was maybe right when you were falling asleep.
I remember that.
Here comes Carlos Estevez. And Jake, are you aware that Mr. Estevez was 23 for 23 in save opportunities? Yes, was.
Was.
And how does that outing start, Jake? Seven straight balls. He throws four straight balls to Kyle Raleigh. He throws three straight balls to Ty France. He almost hits Ty France multiple times, as many pitchers have done. And then he walks Ty France. Okay. Jose Caballero pinch runs for Ty France. And out comes Dominic Canzone, one of their trade acquisitions, who takes ball one again. It's like, oh my God, this is a disaster. And at this point, if you're Dom Canzone, you're like, well, if he throws it down the middle, I'm going to swing. And that is what happens. And he lines a single into right field. It is now bases loaded with nobody out. And Carlos Estevez's perfect record is on, you know, is on the line here. Up comes Teoscar Hernandez, who everyone thought was going to be traded 3 days ago. And he has looked horrific. Teoscar promptly strikes out. And I was like, oh, great, Teoscar strike. He's going to strike out. But I was like, oh, the good news is that Cade Marlowe is on deck. And Cade Marlowe has been incredible since he was called up a few weeks back. And since he has filled in, is now playing every day because Jared Kelnick kicked a cooler. And up comes Cade Marlowe. And Carlos Estevez says, all right, well, I better gas this guy up. And he throws him 98 at the top of the zone, swings through it, strike one. 98 at the top of zone, swings through it, strike two. And I was like, damn, he's going to throw that again because Cade Marlowe, who maybe has not seen anything quite like Carlos Estevez to this point, probably can't hit that again. Oh, oops, 100 at the top of the zone, grand slam. Cade Marlowe hits a grand slam. Mariners take the lead. You are watching the video now for the first time. And it was an incredible moment. The Mariners have had some kind of customary chaotic wins in recent days. And this one truly topped the list. What is your takeaway from watching this for the first time this morning?
So there's been a lot of conversation recently about how pitching strategy in modern times revolves around fastballs at the top of the zone. And that creates a very interesting metagame within baseball, where if you know that pitchers are going to throw a lot of fastballs at the top of the zone, you can just sit on that, right, and anticipate it and cheat to it and hit it out. And then it creates a situation, well, okay, if you do that, then I'm going to throw you a slider or a curveball and you're going to have no chance, right? This pitch on this 0-2 count, if you're down 0-2 in this spot against a guy throwing 100 miles an hour, you have to guess. You have to sit on the fastball and adjust to anything else and hope that you could foul it off, right?
Right.
So you can see after he swings and misses at the first two that Cade Marlowe is just thinking high
heat. He takes a timeout. So he, right before that last pitch, he takes a timeout and then bam. And when you mentioned that metagame, I do find it so fascinating in a spot like this where, you know, as I'm watching as an observer, he just swung through the same pitch twice. Does that, if I'm the hitter, am I thinking like, he doesn't think I can get to that.
Correct.
Because maybe I can't. And so does that make me more likely to guess that versus, you know, a backfoot slider?
Right. And I think it is better to guess that in that situation because you've seen it twice. And so you have at least like a visual, it's in your visual Rolodex a little bit more than whatever breaking ball Carlos Estevez is throwing. This kind of reminds me of when Miguel Cabrera was at his peak and he would like purposefully look bad on pitches so that he would get them again, which is the sickest thing of all time.
Right.
But Cade Marlowe here, it's a really interesting swing when you watch it because he's trying to be so short to the baseball at the top of the zone. Right?
And it's a great example of let him supply the power. I mean, obviously you have to have the bat speed to get to it at the top of the zone, and he does, right? But it was an incredible swing. And it was kind of, as we kind of transition into the bigger picture moment of this, first of all, obviously, I mean, win of the season, it was incredible for Seattle, 2.5 back, you know, game and a half up on Anaheim. This first game, like anytime they're facing Ohtani, like I can't tell you how many times you look at the Angels schedule and you're like, all right, so they'll lose the Ohtani start and then you got to kind of piece it together the rest of the way. And so when you win the Ohtani start, it's just like now it's like anything's possible.
Yeah.
So especially part of a, you know, the start of a four game series, it's a big opportunity for Seattle here. Not going to get ahead of ourselves here. Still three games left, but it was an incredible moment. And Cade Marlowe has been fantastic. And he's an incredible story. Dude was on the Savannah Bananas, like right as the Savannah Bananas are becoming the Savannah Bananas. You're like, what, why, what was he doing there? Well, he was a Division II player who was not expecting to get drafted. And so he was playing for the Bananas back in 2018. He's at a D2 West Georgia. He's down in that area already. And then the Mariners signed him for $5,000 in the 20th round of the 2019 draft. And just immediately, I mean, he literally raked at every single level of the minors. And he was always older because he was a senior sign. And everyone was just like, oh, he's older. He's older. Oh, he's older. He's older. He's older. He's older. And then at some point, he's like, well, shit, man. Like, this dude's got like a 900 OPS in the minors in so many games and so many plate appearances. Like, let's see what he can do. And now he's been a huge part of their kind of turnaround recently.
So let's take a look at the wild card picture. As you mentioned earlier, after the deadline, it is time that this starts to feel very real. The wild card picture is coming into focus, and let's begin in the American League, where the three division leaders are Baltimore, Texas, and Minnesota. And then the wild card teams are Tampa Bay, who is 5.5 up on Houston in the second spot, who is 2 games up on Toronto in the third spot. Boston is 2 games back of Toronto. The Yankees are 2.5 back of Toronto. The Mariners are 2.5 back of Toronto. And the Angels are 4 back of Toronto. Cleveland is kind of swimming in the middle ground. They're 6.5 back of Toronto. If you want to loop them into this group, sure, but they're not good enough to get the wild card. They have to chase down the Twins. Whatever. Jordan Schusterman, we are talking about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 teams for 2 spots. I'm going to take Tampa Bay right now, at least, and push them.
Oh, yeah. No, I agree with above. That. I feel like Tampa Bay and Baltimore at this point, I mean, I don't know. I guess we can just have that conversation quickly. Like, because even in June, you were like, I still don't know who's going to win this division. It could still be, you know, Toronto, whatever. now it feels like we're pretty settled on Tampa or Baltimore.
Correct.
Could still be Tampa, but yeah.
Absolutely. But I think like AL East team two is ahead. So if I see it, it's Houston, Toronto, Boston, the Yankees, Seattle, and the Angels for two spots. The Astros, I think, are figuring shit out. I know they lost game one of the series last night to the Yankees, but it just feels like the Astros are coming back into form. Seeing Verlander around the clubhouse yesterday was like terrifying. I was like, oh shit, it's also, here we go again.
It is so surreal. I cannot remember, obviously everything about that situation is completely unique, but it's staggering. Like, that's a situation where, like, are we even going to remember he was on the Mets in 20 years? Like, if they just go and win the World Series again this year, all just so, so, so bizarre. But I agree with you. I love Dusty Baker. I'm not one to freak out about lineup construction, but there are some things with their current lineup that I do not understand whatsoever, such as Yordan fifth and best hitter in the world, Chaz McCormick seventh. But that's also part of their strength. I can't get too bent out of shape about that. I agree with you. I think Houston's in good shape. But, you know, there's still a version where we can't totally pencil them in. So I agree with that. And maybe it's a version where Texas falls back and they're in this conversation. So I think that's part of that too. At the same time, I think some people would say no, like AL West 2 should also be a lock. And I think that that's a reasonable argument too.
Correct. So then at least right now, we have Toronto, Boston, the Yankees, the Mariners, and the Angels. Who besides the Mariners are you hoping? Let's say the Mariners lose 12 in a row. Mm-hmm. Sorry. And they fall out of it. Of Toronto, Boston, New York, and the Angels, who do you want to get that last spot?
Ooh. Who do I want to get it? I think I am on board. Like, obviously, when I have my Mariners hat on, I'm going to be happy to see them fail. But, like, I would rather see the Angels than those other teams. If we're accepting that Houston's in it or Texas is in it and Tampa's in it, whatever, like, I'd, of course, rather see the Angels than Boston or New York. And I like Toronto. Like, that's another thing where I differ from Mariners fans. Like, I enjoy watching Toronto. I know that they're the natural rival, whatever. I like watching them. But also, we have seen them kind of come up short in a different way. And so I think it would still be the Angels. It's just with Boston and New York, after, like, those two teams, when you look at the deadline, Boston was also inactive, you know? And I know that they don't have the same kind of pressure in the same way, but, and they've been playing better, so it doesn't feel as urgent. And I think that's also fair with Story coming back, Sales also coming back. Like, there's reasons for them more to stay put than the Yankees, I think. But that's also an interesting dynamic in terms of how the fans are feeling there. I imagine there's at least some level of, like, couldn't do a little bit more than what Boston did. But obviously, I'm not going to root as a neutral fan to see either of those teams in the postseason again. But it is interesting which of those is in a better position too.
I really can't handle having the Yankees, this Yankees team and this Red Sox team, being in the mix together is really just too sloggish for my brain. Like, they're just neither of them. The Red Sox recently have been more exciting to watch.
Yeah, I gotta say,
they're a weird team.
But they're certainly weird. But, like, they have enough new young pieces that I really do enjoy watching, like Brian Bello. Obviously, like Casas. I mean, you know, Devers is one of my favorite players. But, like, there's enough interesting going on there that it feels a little bit more fresh. Whereas, again, like you mentioned about the Yankees, it's just not, like, this is not a fun watch at all.
Whenever the Yankees win, it's either Aaron Judge, get on my back, we're going to win today, or it's the old guys being like, still got it.
Yeah.
Like, last but night I was will Stanton, say, still got it.
The one version, especially after last night, is like Volpe, right? Like, if Volpe can really figure it out and start having moments like this, like, that would be cool. I would enjoy that to some degree. But here's the issue. Look, is that the Angels are not looking so hot since they went all in to some degree. They're on an L3. Unfortunately, our friend Lucas Giolito just gave up 900 runs in Atlanta, but that was in Atlanta. A lot of people have given up 900 runs in Atlanta, okay?
Our other friend Mickey Moniak is potentially crash landing down to earth.
Which we all could have seen coming. That's okay. But the Angels, like, it's slipping here, but they have no choice. Obviously, they're going to be going for it no matter what. But you can see it kind of starting to slip away. Four games out is fine, and they can get right back in it if they bounce back against Seattle this weekend. Totally capable of that for sure. But that, like, we could be talking in a week and they're already farther out of it than we feel. And everyone's going to be like, see, they should have traded Otani. But it's like, no, this was always a possibility no matter what. This was always perhaps a likelihood. Okay. Correct. That doesn't mean it. That does not negate the grand speech you gave about the duty to go for it with Otani. I totally still agree with you on that. But if you thought that it was definitely going to work, well, sorry, you're still watching the Angels.
Even if we never made it to the moon, JFK's moon speech still slaps, baby. Yesterday, Andy McCullough of The Athletic explained it really well to me about the Angels. He was like, what they did at the deadline was stupid and the right thing to do.
Yep. Well said. Let's move to the NL quickly before we take a break, because this one, okay, so we just described six teams for two spots, maybe five teams for one spot if you want to, you know, give the second AL East and AL West. How many teams are we talking about for the National League?
So this is seven teams for three spots. So we have Atlanta is 83 games up, I believe, in their division. You could just take Atlanta, pick them up, put them to the side. They're a juggernaut. They don't need to even think or worry about the wild card.
Yeah.
It's not in their frame.
I will say Atlanta is in such a... We have arrived and everybody has acknowledged them as the best team. That was not the case even in April and May.
Like, yeah.
It wasn't. But we're all there now. So the only storyline with Atlanta is staying healthy. And once we get to October, it's like, oh shit, like you gotta win. I know it's never, of course it's a crapshoot, but they should be feeling better than everybody else all the way until the first game of the postseason.
Right. And then it's honestly like, it's not just seven teams for three spots. Yeah, it's like nine teams for five spots, because I'll just read it out. The Dodgers right now are leading the American League West. However, they are just 2.5 games up on the Giants. So they are still somewhat in the wild card mix, or at least in the wild card picture. And then the Brewers are a half game up on the Reds in the Central and 2.5 games up on the Cubs. And so the Brewers, the team that's going to win the NL Central, is also in the wild card mix. Okay. But the current wild card standings. The Giants are 2.5 up. The Giants are 2.5 up on the Phillies. The Phillies are one up on the Reds. The Reds are a half game up on the Marlins. Okay. The Reds are 1.5 up on the Diamondbacks. And the Cubs are 2 back of the Reds. And the Padres are 4 back of the Reds. So it is a very jumbled mess. This picture will probably get much clearer by September 1st. However, we want as many characters in this story as we possibly can. We want it to be messy. We want it to be very unclear. I want as many teams as possible still involved on September 1st so that we can get as many fan bases as possible interested in the wild card race down the stretch.
Mm-hmm. And when you look at the teams, and again, when you reflect on the deadline activity, the Cubs and the D-backs and the Marlins and the Padres to some degree adding, right? The Reds are the team that did not add. Now, are they still good enough to win the division? Honestly, probably yes. But it obviously does not look great this week. But let's ask the same question you just asked about the AL, because I think it's way more interesting here because you have way more options. Just as a neutral fan perspective, let's just say Milwaukee wins. Okay, so let's just keep it that way. I mean, I'm obviously rooting for the Reds and I want to see them, just obviously selfishly, but like, what is the ideal three NL wildcard teams for you from an entertainment standpoint? Because there's a lot of right answers here. There's not a lot of wrong answers for these combinations of teams. Don't worry about the matchup specifically yet. Just the three teams.
I would love for the Dodgers to not make the playoffs as comeuppance for building their 2023 season around getting Otani this winter. Mm-hmm. You're punting for free agency? And you're not going to spend any money and sign to make your team better? You know what? Fine. I get it. Otani's once in a lifetime. But you don't get to be in the playoffs this year. Sorry, buddy. So I know that's unrealistic. But that would be
some
fun.
Some Dodgers humbling would be nice. I agree.
But they're going to win the division. I feel pretty confident about that. I would probably say Philly, Cincy, and the Cubs. I know that's a weird one because we've been on the toot-toot Miami train.
Yeah.
But I'm the world's biggest Phillies fan. Everyone knows.
Sure.
Cincy, so that you have playoff baseball within driving distance. Yeah. And then the Cubs, man, like just out of nowhere from the top step, playoff baseball, Wrigley Field is the best.
I should also mention that, you know, the Giants also did nothing respect to Mark Mathias and AJ Pollock. Like that, in their position to do nothing is maybe even more shocking. But I don't even... Right, the Giants perpetually, we've kind of referred to them in the same way we talk about the Red Sox. And I think that that is a fair comparison. Yeah.
I would say these are all fun options. Yeah. The narratives with each of these teams in the wildcard mix are actually very fun.
Oh, yeah. I'm satisfied for all of these teams to make it because there was versions of all of these seasons where you'd be like, what? Like, what in the world?
Right. So like the Padres, if the Padres make the postseason now, that is awesome. If the Cubs make the postseason out of freaking nowhere, that is awesome. If the young, fun, running, gunning Diamondbacks with Corbin Carroll make it, that's cool. If the Marlins do it against all odds with their one run record, that's amazing. The Reds, young bunch is great. The Phillies going to try and avenge their World Series losses. Like, the Giants maybe is a little bit less interesting because they're more of an anonymous team, but I actually think the anonymity is compelling in itself. Sure. And so these are all fun to, for me to think about. Like when I envision a playoff matchup, I'm intrigued by all of these.
Agreed. Here's where I'm at on the Giants. I want them to either win the division or miss the playoffs. If they're in the wild card, that is not interesting to me because it wouldn't have shocked me if you told me they made the wild card because it's like, okay, yeah, this team is built to not be bad and there's a version where they're good. And okay, if they are in the second, like that's none of that surprising. Whereas the rest of them are all fascinating. I think my pick is Reds, Marlins, Padres. But the Cubs, I agree with you. I am enjoying the Cubs renaissance in that sense. Jake Mintz, we are going to take a break. And when we return, we are going to talk about our favorite award. An award. What award is being given out at the beginning of August? You're about to find out. We'll be right back.
This is former PGA Tour winner Smiley Kaufman, host of The Smiley Show, a SiriusXM podcast. You want to know what I love about golf? I get to talk to some really cool people. I get to walk the fairways of the best courses in the world with the best players in the world, and I get to share it with you every single week. Listen to The Smiley Show right now on Stitcher, Pandora, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts. That's Smiley, S-M-Y-L-I-E.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. It is time for one of me and Jordan and I, favorite games of the year. We have been playing this off the record, behind closed doors for some time now, and we thought it was the moment to bring this bit to the light. Jordan, what is the Heart and Hustle Award?
Well, we are going to bring Chris in to give us the official explanation. Producer Chris is going to serve as the host of this game. But the Heart and Hustle Award is an award given out to one player on each team during the season for a reason that Chris is going to explain in a second. It is one of our favorite awards because the name of it is great because it already gives you just the kind of, it is not about stats, or is it about stats? It is not about heart and hustle, or is it about heart and hustle? And each team has a player that, you know, kind of embodies this. And the fact that they give it out in the middle of the season is also bizarre and strange. And so since 2017, Jake and I, usually me, will go through the list and guess who the winner is for each team. Now, I have seen a couple of them, but not most of them. And so we are going to guess together and have this revealed to us. So producer Chris, you have the explanation for the Heart and Hustle Award, so please describe it to us, and then we are going to rapid fire through the teams and see how many of them we can get right.
Firstly, thank you for having me on again. This is the second time this week. I am becoming a regular rotation player on this podcast. It's been
Don't get too comfortable.
Okay? Oh, I'm not. Trust me. All right. So the Heart and Hustle Award was created by the Major League Baseball Players Alumni Association in 2005. It's voted on by alumni and active Major League players and is presented annually to an active player who demonstrates a passion for the game of baseball and best embodies the values, spirit, and traditions of the game.
Okay.
It is the vaguest award ever.
But here's what's important there is the key detail. Voted on by I think current and former players, okay? So this is who the players are looking at and appreciating and respecting the most. This is not us scribes, as they say. They're saying, screw the BBWAA. We want to award these players for being baseball players. These are baseball players, okay? So that is the good way to think about it. And again, it's very strange, the history of this award. Usually sometimes the same guy wins every year, but let's just get going, Chris. Let's just go team by team. You are going to say the team. Jake and I are both going to offer our guesses, and then you will tell us who we are, and I'm going to keep track of how many we get correct. So,
all right, let's rapid fire. Baltimore Orioles.
I'll go first. Adley Rutschman. Jordan?
Gunnar Henderson.
Nope. Anthony Santander.
Okay, off. All right, what's next?
Boston Red Sox.
Ooh. I'm going to go with Jaron Duran.
I'm going to go with, wow, this is, I'll go with Connor Wong.
Justin Turner.
Just, oh, damn it. Okay.
Barely played.
Okay, keep going.
Chicago White Sox.
Nobody. I'm nobody. I'm just going to go with Robert because when teams are so bad, they just pick the best player.
I'm going to go with Andrew Benintendi.
Hey, Jake. Nice. Benintendi.
Oh, man. Okay. That is. He's so gritty for having all the slugging 300. All right. What's next?
Guardians.
I will go with Stephen Kwan.
Jose Ramirez still.
Hey, Jordan. Well done.
Okay.
One all.
Yeah, don't overthink that. Kwan last year probably won, but okay, I'm going Ramirez. All right, I'm on the board. What's next?
Detroit.
Ooh, I'm going to go with Zach McKinstry.
I will go with...
Maybe they just gave it to Miguel Cabrera.
Maybe they gave it to Baez. No, I'm going to go with...
Maybe they gave it to... Okay, yeah, what's your real guess?
Wow, this is a very difficult one. I'll go with Cary Carpenter.
Friend of the show, Matt Vealing.
Oh, damn. Yeah. That is a good one. Okay. All right. What's next?
Astros.
Chaz McCormick.
Yeah. I'll go Tucker.
Tucker it is.
Okay. Damn. All right. It should be McCormick. You're right.
Royals.
I know this one. So go ahead. I'm abstaining.
You know this one? I think it's just going to be Bobby Witt Jr.
You'd be right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Bobby Witt Jr. The LA Angels.
Here's a good one, Jordan. If a guy's father played in the big leagues,
oh man,
alumni know the player, and so he wins.
Yeah. His dad might be voting. I mean, who knows? This is hilarious because I believe David Fletcher has won this multiple times. He's currently in AAA. And like, it's so funny because it's like embodies the spirit of baseball. Well, who's doing more baseball than everybody else? Shohei Ohtani. Jake. It should be Ohtani. I am not going to guess Ohtani, okay? So you can't guess Ohtani either. So who's your
guess? Why?
Oh, okay, you are guessing Ohtani.
I'm
going to
guess Ohtani, yeah. All right. Jordan?
Okay, if you're guessing Ohtani, I'm guessing Ohtani.
That's not Ohtani.
Okay, so wait, then let us get each one.
Okay,
guess.
Then it's very often very hard for pitchers to win, but I'm going to go with Carlos Estevez.
I'm going to go with Zach Neto.
Well done, Jake. Zach Neto.
Oh, damn. Nicely. Yeah. That's great.
Again, I just want to say, can you just read the definition again, please, just for a second? Because the idea that Shohei Ohtani is not eligible or like proper for this award is so funny.
It's presented to an active player who demonstrates a passion for the game of baseball and best embodies the values, spirit, and traditions of the game. Traditions. He's doing both.
No. But I would say that's not the traditions. I would say he's bucking the traditions.
That's what I'm saying.
He's actually, he's disrespecting the traditions. So never mind. Neto's the right answer. That was the terrible guess for me. All right, what's next?
Twins.
Okay. I am going to go with, I'm still going to go Correa here.
I will go with.
Even though he's been bad.
Whew. I will go with Christian Vasquez.
You're both wrong. It's Pablo Lopez.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one. Okay.
That's a good pitcher to win it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yankees.
Ooh, Yankees. Okay. I'm going to go with Jose Trevino.
No. So the Yankees right here.
So judge can win. I just, Donnie can't.
I think if Anthony Volpe doesn't win this, then like, what's the point of the award? So I'll take Volpe.
It's Isaiah Kanafalefa.
Amazing pick, because it's like he endured all the hate to emerge on the other side. Someone tell Stephen A. Smith that Isaiah Kanafalefa.
Hey, quickly on the Stephen A. Smith thing. You just have to remember that Stephen A., his baseball analysis is always on a year lag.
Yeah.
Continue. Yeah.
The A's.
Oh, boy. Tony Kemp.
Yeah, got to be Tony Kemp.
Carlos Perez.
Carlos Perez, who is not... Is he on the IL?
Yeah, he's the catcher. He's the catcher. Wow, that's an all-timer. All right. Wow, that's a tough look for Shea Langeliers, by the way. Like really tough look. Who's leading the league in caught stealing. I know he hasn't been hitting, but like Shea Langeliers is catching all the time. So maybe Carlos Perez is just like the man, which is cool. Good for him.
The Mariners, Jordan.
Oh, I know this one.
This is a layup, though. It's J.P. Crawford.
Yeah. It is J.P. Crawford.
That would have been my guess. Yes, good.
The Rays.
The Rays. Okay, I'm going to go Yandy.
Yandy? Yandy's a good pick. I don't think alumni like Randy.
That's why I picked Yandy.
I think they
definitely don't like Wander. So, who you got?
I think I'm going to go Isak
Paredes. Good guess. Who is it, Chris?
Jake, you're underestimating the alumni. It's Randy Arozarena.
Okay. So really? He won them over. Yeah. All right.
Wow. I like that. The crusty old people
That's less
were like.
Surprising. If it was Wander, I would be floored. Randy, I think people like him by now.
The Rangers.
Semien. Lock.
Yes. Semien.
It is Semien.
Okay. Yeah.
And Toronto Blue Jays.
Whit Merrifield.
Oh, Whit is a great pick. I'm going to go Bichette here.
You're both wrong. It's Dalton Varsho.
Varsho is a good one.
That's, again,
Dad played in the big leagues.
That's an interesting one because Dalton Varsho, I love the guy, has been very, very bad. Amazing defender, not hitting at all. But it sounds like he's still embodying the spirit and tradition of baseball. So that's great.
I don't know if he is. I mean, he was a catcher and he was like, this is not for me. Is that the spirit?
Well, if he's going to become one of the best defensive outfielders in the game, I can't really blame him.
All right.
National League.
Yes, so that was the American League. Moving on to the National League.
Can we get a score check?
Diamondbacks.
Wait, can we get a score check?
I'll score check at the end.
Okay. Diamondbacks is Corbin Carroll.
Corbin Carroll, yeah.
It is Corbin Carroll. Okay. The Atlanta Braves.
I'm going to go with Austin Riley.
I'm going to go with Matt Olson because he plays every day.
Yeah, it's probably Olson. Who is it?
It's Austin Riley.
Okay, that's a big, that's a huge dub for me. Okay, yeah. I immediately was like, should have guessed Matt Olson, but okay.
Because Olson, I believe, has the current Cal Ripken record for consecutive games played.
He's, like the whole Braves team. So does Austin. I think Austin Riley's barely missed a game either. So
yeah.
The Cubs.
This is the one I know. This was spoiled for me.
Okay, I don't know this one. I'm guessing Dansby.
It's Nico Horner.
Oh, okay. Yeah, both of those could have been. Damn, all right, that's fine.
Reds?
I know this one.
You do. Okay, so the correct answer, to be real, is TJ Friedl.
Uh-huh.
But I'm skeptical that they gave it to... I'm going to go TJ Friedl. I'll go TJ Friedl.
Spot on, Jake.
Nicely done. Nicely done. Reds, a lot of good picks for them. Very good job. Yeah, Friedl's fantastic.
Colorado Rockies.
The whole team, baby.
I mean, if Carlos Perez can win it, I guess Elias Diaz can too. I'm going to stick with McMahon here.
I will also take McMahon.
It's Elias Diaz.
Damn it. I disrespected our all-star MVP. All right. Well, okay. I don't get points for that.
Just want people to quickly, people listening, you understand how vague and scattershot and random these awards, like it's impossible to guess. It doesn't mean anything.
It's great. I'm learning. I'm also, it's great too, because like I do learn about players' perceptions of players.
Correct.
By these awards. So, all right, what's next?
Dodgers.
Like this could still be Miguel Rojas. That's the thing.
It could also be, there's a lot of options here. Mookie, Hayward, Peralta. Yeah.
Hayward. Oh, Hayward versus Freddie. I'm going to go with Hayward.
I'm going to go with Mookie.
Freddie Freeman.
Oh, damn it.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, that's not surprising, but I felt like Hayward would have. Okay, yeah. What's next?
Miami Marlins.
Luis Arraez. Old players love time. They love batting average.
Yeah.
It is Luis Arraez.
Okay. Yeah. That's easy. Yep.
The Brewers.
If Sal Frelick had been up from the beginning of the if year, he was Sal Frelick would have been a layup.
Give it to him. Man, I don't like any. You know what? I'm going to go with William Contreras. It's my guess here. Sorry.
I think Yelich will get it.
It is Greensboro Grasshoppers legend Christian Yelich, correct.
Damn. Okay. All right. That's a big dub for Jake. That's fine. Okay.
Ball players love seeing a guy bounce back.
He's playing great. That's true.
New York Mets.
I mean.
Steve Cohen.
I'm going to go Nimmo here.
I'll go with McNeil.
Jordan, you got it. It's Brandon Nimmo.
Yes. McNeil sucked. That doesn't matter. To it. Sometimes it does. Sometimes it does. I feel like if we're comparing him and Nimmo are similar, so I think it helped that Nimmo's actually playing well.
Quick Mets thing. DJ Stewart hit second last night or yesterday afternoon.
And Jonathan Araúz. That's the Orioles feeling great. Two Orioles legends there, Araúz and DJ Stewart.
Next up, the Phillies.
Can it be Reese Hoskins for his support from the bench? So, I'm going to... Oh, wow.
I think Kyle Schwarber is like too old and older players don't like how much he strikes out.
That I agree with. That's why I'm going to guess Castellanos. Castellanos. Who also strikes out a lot, but like is more of like... I'm going Castellanos.
I'm going to go with Bryson Stott.
Oh, man. That's such a good guess. Who is it?
Garrett Stubbs.
Garrett Stubbs.
Okay, what a run for catchers here. We got Diaz, Carlos Rodon, and Garrett Stubbs. So that is outstanding.
The backup catcher.
Thrilled to be wrong on those.
Oh, that's awesome. We got to get Garrett on the show to accept his award.
Okay, all right. Just a few more. Who we got left?
Pittsburgh Pirates.
I saw this one.
You saw this one. I think it is going to be Brian Reynolds.
It is David Bednar.
Is that the only pitcher so far? Pablo Lopez. Oh, Pablo Lopez. Okay, so yeah, very difficult to win as a pitcher. So, but that's a good one. I like that pick.
Padres.
I know this one too.
I'm gonna go with Ha-Sung Kim.
Spot on. Yeah. Nice one, Jake.
Nice.
Yeah.
The Giants.
Ooh, this could be this Gabe could be Kapler. Guys.
Give it to Gabe Kapler.
I'm going Lamont Wade.
Late night Lamont.
Yeah.
Is that right?
You have to have a guess first.
Oh, okay. I thought you were confirming his guess.
He's a Giants fan. He just loves late night Lamont.
Late night Lamont. I will go with Wilmer Flores.
Oh, great guess.
Oh, that is a good one. But it is late night Lamont.
Yes. Okay. Nice.
The Cardinals.
Nobody.
Oh, Cardinals is interesting because they have all kinds of options, but their season's gone so poorly. Because
don't
think
too hard.
So perfect. I'll go Goldschmidt. If Freeman won, I'm going to go Goldschmidt is my guess.
I'm going to say it should be Brendan Donovan, to be clear, but I will also guess Goldschmidt.
It's Brendan Donovan. You should have stuck with
him. Damn.
He just had season-ending surgery, too. Damn it. Okay.
Last one.
Donovan won it last year.
But. This is the last one, the Washington Nationals.
Ooh.
Wow.
I'm going to go Lane Thomas.
Yeah, I think it. If I was a former player, I would vote for Pat Corbin because I think that's funny. But I will also go with Lane Thomas. Yeah.
Lane Thomas, it is.
All right. Okay. So our final tally. I know I knew more of them, so fewer opportunities to get them right. I got 9 correct, and Jake got 11. Nicely done, sir. Very just incredible work. Although I will point out that 7 of those were ones that I happened to, or no, never mind. I take that back. You win. You have more heart and more hustle than me. Congratulations.
Thank you, Jake.
It is time to do the good, the bad, the ugly. We're going to rapid fire this since we got to get out of here. Let us begin. Something good, something bad, something ugly from the past week. Start us off.
Ryan Mountcastle against the Blue Jays. Do you know about this?
Yes, I saw some great memes about Mountcastle arriving to Canada with it's funny, plenty of cheers, although I imagine it would be the opposite because they don't never want to see him again.
His career numbers against the Blue Jays compared to his career numbers against everyone else are hilarious. He is a 7.72 career OPS hitter. However, against the Toronto Blue Jays, he is a career. Oh, sorry, I have the wrong splits up in front of me. That's so
embarrassing. Well, I was going to say, is it just the Blue Jays or is it in Toronto specifically or both?
It's a little bit of both, but it's mostly in Toronto. Like his, let me pull up the Rogers Center numbers. So his numbers in the Rogers Center are actually worse than his numbers against the Blue Jays as a whole. Okay. So against the Blue Jays as a whole, he is 60 for 182. That is a batting line of 330, 394, 643 for a 1037 OPS. He has 15 home runs against the Blue Jays.
That is really something. That is there's some sneaky ones like that for interdivision player, you know, team matchups that you might just guys own people.
I bring this up because the Orioles just took 3 out of 4 from the Blue Jays in Canada, and he was just a dominant again. He was like 4 for 5 yesterday afternoon against them.
My good is the Kansas City Royals on a W6.
Woo!
They spent the whole season flirting with being the worst team in baseball with Oakland, but the W6 combined with the L4 from Oakland has given them 5 games difference between the two, and Bobby Witt Jr. looks like one of the best players on earth. And I'm just so happy for Royals fans that they get to have anything. It was an undefeated homestand. Great to see. They have a star in Bobby Witt Jr. So much still more needs to be fixed, but this week in August and July, they can finally say, hey, our team is kicking ass, and we'd love to see it.
That's the Heart and Hustle Award winner, Bobby Witt Jr., to you, by the way.
Oh, that's true. The Heart and Hustle. He was fueled by it. He knew that he was about to receive the most important award in baseball. Here's a fun down-the-stretch thing to watch. Can the Royals catch the White Sox? I don't think so. I mean, there's still 7 back. Eight back, but that'd be a funny thing to watch. Anyway, what's your bad?
My bad is the Cleveland Guardians offense, Jordan. This is a stat courtesy of Zach Mysel, the reporter for The Athletic who covers the Guardians. The Guardians have been no-hit 5 times since the start of the 2021 season. That both does not fully capture their ineptitude, but also perfectly captures their ineptitude, because the Guardians' issue is not that they don't get hits. It's that they don't get home runs, right? They put the ball in play a lot, and they have a high batting average. They just can't hit it over the fence. But the idea that just 5 nights since the beginning of 2021, that's like 2.5 seasons, they have been no hit 5 times. That is so bad.
I think about them, again, how we thought about them and Tampa Bay with that eternal game last year that Oscar Gonzalez won, how we thought that both of those offenses were an embarrassment. And then Tampa Bay comes out the season and has the best offense we've ever seen with a lot of the same players. And Cleveland now still has 82 home runs in 109 games, which is obviously by far 30th. That is indeed bad. Jake, my bad is a layup, and it pains me to say, but it's Trey Turner. I don't really know how long we are going to have to wait for Trey Turner to, and he seems to be having... It's the errors, which is really, because errors is really what gets the casual fans to turn on you, because they might not notice what your full offensive, you know, line is. And if you get enough hits and steal enough bases, it's whatever. But if you are making a lot of money and you make an error, I mean, it's as bad as it gets. And while that is not necessarily a reflection of Trey Turner's true talent as a defender, or his 662 OPS as a hitter, it is stunning. It is a stunning thing. He's not the only high-paid shortstop that is not having a good season, but he is one that is currently getting the most flack. And I guess I'm adding to that. Sorry, Trey Turner.
Jordan, my ugly is a dream. Do you have baseball dreams, Jordan?
Occasionally, but not as often as you would assume.
So I was in the clubhouse yesterday in my dream. I was in the A's clubhouse, and there was Adam Ottavino.
And Heart and Hustle Award winner Carlos Perez.
But why was Adam Ottavino in the A's clubhouse? I don't know, but it was in my dream. And I was like talking to him about something, which is weird also because I don't really know him personally. So I was talking to Adam Ottavino, and you know, we're just kicking it, and he's telling me, he just goes, yeah, so before the deadline, every player in baseball needs to pick a new number for every team in the league just in case they get traded there. So like they pre-select a new number.
For every team.
For every team.
That's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work.
For every player.
For every player. And he was like, yeah, it's just totally standard. And I was like, that doesn't sound right. And he was like, no, like I'm a player. You have to trust me. And he like pulled out a list and it was like his number choices for every team just in case he got traded there. And I was like, well, okay, if it's true, Adam Ottavino said it. And I woke up and I was like, I remembered it once I woke up. I was like, that can't be right. Oh, it was a dream. So anyway, that's my ugla.
That is so ugla. My ugla is a link I just sent you. It is a video of Rowdy Reed. Remember Rowdy Reed?
I do remember Rowdy Reed. Didn't he get popped for PEDs?
He did have a PED suspension at some point, yes. Rowdy Reed is currently playing for the Spire City Ghost Hounds.
Too much.
Formerly the Frederick Keys in Frederick, Maryland, in the Atlantic League. And Rowdy Reed was playing first base, and he caught a double play ball. And what did he do after he caught the double play ball? Jake is watching this video for the first time. Describe what you see for me.
So he catches the ball on a double play, calmly tosses his glove onto the ground outside the first base dugout. It's a little bizarre. And the camera pans back to the wide shot. And then you see all of his teammates running over to the stands where Rowdy Reed has gone full Artest and has confronted a fan on the concourse.
Which we know well. We've been to this park multiple times. We know that is those steps that go up to the clubhouse, I believe. Yeah, he just kind of went for it.
Wait, where is this?
This is in Frederick, Maryland.
Wow.
Yeah. We've seen it. Now, the real reason I just wanted to share this is that the funniest part about this video, which was, I guess, being broadcast by Flow Sports, is that they're like, oh, we're going to take a break. And then while there's video of him being restrained on the concourse by, like, police, they're running an ad for, like, a Frederick Hotel. And it's just one of the funniest combinations of audio and video that I've ever seen. So, I'm sure someone said something heinous to Rowdy Reed that was totally uncalled for, and I, you know, whatever. But you can't run into stance. That's day one stuff. So
Rowdy met a world peace.
His name's Rowdy for a reason. All right, that's the good, the bad, the ugla, Jake. That's the podcast. Thank you, Chris Tyler, for producing and hosting the Hard and Hustle Award guessing game. Thank you, Jake, for co-hosting with me. Thank you, Cade Marlowe. For putting some pep in my step on this Friday. And we will be back on Monday with another Baseball Barbacast. But until then, we hope you all enjoy the weekend. Any final words, Jake Mintz?
A week from now, Jordan, you and I will be recording a podcast together in the same place. Excited about that.
Yeah, we sure are. Until then, have a good weekend. Bye.
SiriusXM Podcasts.